Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Radzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Virgil Hammonds, CEO at the Aurora Institute. Virgil helps to lead the Aurora Institute, which aims to uplift transformative ideas and actions for American public education. Virgil, we're so happy to have you here. Welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm honored to be on your podcast. It's great. I'm a big fan.
Virgil, we're so glad you're here. And you and the Aurora Institute work to do nothing less than transform K-12 education in the United States. It's no easy task, and it's one that the Institute approaches from lots of different angles: research and evaluation, advocacy at state and federal levels, convening like-minded partners, and so on. So tell us, what ties it all together? When you think about education transformation, what do you ultimately hope to see?
Yes, not a small feat at all, but the best part of our work in service of young people, families, and learning communities across the country is that we actually get to partner with incredible people and communities that are helping to lead that transformative work. And for us, it's about lifting and amplifying those efforts so we can start to identify some meta themes, some pedagogy and assessment structures that truly are learner-centered. And for us, over the last 15 years in our research, we have landed on structures, systems, practices, engagements that help learners to drive to deeper levels of learning, to what we call competency-based education.
Virgil, you recently joined the Aurora Institute as CEO. Can you talk a little bit about what attracted you to this kind of work, and what is it that you're most excited about as you look to the Aurora Institute's future?
I think the biggest piece for me is I come at this work very much from an educator's perspective. Most of my professional career has been spent in classrooms and schools, holding every role under the traditional makeup of school. And a piece that I recognized in my various roles is that we need to absolutely think differently about what might be possible when thinking about young people. And it really hit home for me when you start to think of your own children. For all of us that have children, we believe that anything is possible for our kids, but the reality is our systems are not necessarily designed that way. I first met the Aurora Institute when it was formerly called iNACL, and as a superintendent in Maine, we were working on proficiency diploma legislation. And the Aurora Institute was such a tremendous partner in helping our state and our field to understand, like, what could this look like if we were actually driving to deeper levels of learning where we're quantifying, qualifying proficiency in a variety of contexts that transcend our school walls, and we validate that through a new diploma that really speaks to the efforts of that learner, but also those efforts of that learner in partnership with community. And the Aurora Institute was a tremendous partner in helping legislation come together for us in Maine, but also in all 50 states, legislation that really centers on what does it mean to empower youth voice and help learners to be partners in the learning design process? What does it mean to personalize pathways where, much like the rest of the world around us, where the world is reshaping based on the needs and interests of us, you know, whether it's the technology in our hand or the types of infotainment we are receiving? What might it look like if we were to personalize pathways for young people on a daily basis? And what might it look like if we were to really think differently about how we credential learning as well? And being a part of a learning community that was really thinking differently about those possibilities, the Aurora Institute was just a tremendous asset for us in helping to address questions, but equally important, connect us with other innovative educators that were thinking differently about what might be possible for young folks.
Virgil, you mentioned a moment ago how personal this work becomes as you become a parent. And we all wear many hats. Two of my hats are, one is a professional working in education, and the other is as a dad of two girls in public education. And I hear you use phrases like a proficiency framework, about pathways, about competency-based learning. And the dad in me says, like, okay, what is it that you mean? What is it that you're saying? And how is that sort of learning experience different from what you and I experienced when we were in school all those years ago?
The really interesting part about our work is that oftentimes in our field, it doesn't matter which state we grew up in, and oftentimes what country we grew up in. When you put up a picture of school, or if you envision in your mind now as you're listening to this podcast, what your school classroom looked like, we generally would be able to make up the same picture, because oftentimes our experiences were very much the same. And be much more personal, I have two children, both of which have different interests. They learn in different ways. They're excited by different things. They are motivated by completely different elements of the world. And they also are angered by different things, right? And so imagine a learning world that actually shifts to engage in those interests in positive ways. And so as an example, my son is all about being outdoors. If you could tell him that he can demonstrate his learning while he is navigating the Maine wilderness, or he is fishing, or he is on his hike, he will absolutely seek opportunities to present evidence of learning in any outdoor environment. Say that he has to do so only in the classroom, he will do it out of compliance, but not because he's motivated by it. My daughter's a complete opposite person. And the interests of my son and her are so opposite that we have to consider learning environments that can really shift with those needs and interests of every learner. And the best part of that is oftentimes we think of the teachers owning those structures and processes, and we absolutely are count on our tremendous educators to think about how we nurture that culture of personalization. But really, it's about how do we empower learners to own some of this learning design.
And Virgil, as you were talking about your two kids, I was thinking about those superhero teachers. Like, what a tough task, right? Because those teachers have those two students and dozens of others. And so whether we think about it in terms of old words like differentiation or use the modern parlance of personalization, what is it that we hope for teachers to be able to do? And more importantly, how can principals and school systems support them to be those amazing facilitators in the classroom?
Great word. I think it is the transition from teaching to facilitation of learning. The key part of all of that is it's absolutely critical for our educators to also understand what that facilitation could look like. And so we need to model that for all of us, adults, educators, and learners as well. Like, how do we provide greater opportunities for educators to be designers of curricula, to be designers of assessments, to partner with community to create and co-design learning experiences in a variety of contexts? That's not oftentimes the experience, or educators don't oftentimes have the opportunity to have those experiences or have the time to co-design with community. So how do we inspire those same personalized learning experiences for educators so that they in turn can support that culture within their classrooms and in partnership with community? And that's a critical piece, right? It's, we have to model it at all sides. And where we've seen this be really successful is when we as educators also recognize that we're not in this by ourselves, right? Like, we don't have to carry the weight of our children on our own. We have this idea of a transition from school system to learning community, where we can identify partners throughout our communities that can help support learners to, through deep, enriching learning experiences, both in our schools, but also throughout our community.
Virgil, the Aurora Institute maintains a map. Our listeners can see it on your institute's website. That's sort of a national snapshot of state policies that are advancing this sort of education. And I think it's a testament to the hunger for this among parents and educators alike that all 50 states are engaged in competency-based education to some degree. You know, the map marks some states as emerging or developing, while others are more advanced. And can you talk about what sets these advanced states apart? You know, what do you see them doing exceptionally well when it comes to competency-based education?
First, let me just compliment our state leaders, our state legislators, and educators within each of these states that have advocated for these opportunities, right? These policy infrastructure does not come to fruition without strong advocacy from parents, from educators, from partners that are helping legislators to see the opportunities in competency-based ed. But I'll say that the more advanced states that have pursued this work essentially create the opportunities for learners to advance based on competency rather than the usual seat time experience. So upon demonstration of competency or identified levels of learning. The other part is a piece that you clearly hear in my voice that I'm excited about is the idea that learning can also transcend school walls, right? It can be done in partnership with community and can be credentialed by a variety of those that wear the traditional educator lens, but also those that I've worked with are educators to co-design learning experiences in and out of school. Additionally, we're thinking about different types of credentialed learning, right? So advanced states also create a variety of credentials, right? Whether it's access to early college experiences or it's professional certifications, those avenues are provided to young people inside schools, but also in partnership with the professional sector and in that region, in that geography. And so it's amazing and inspiring to see how that map, that policy map has evolved and continues to evolve as the field continues to advance these structures and learn from one another.
This is Greg Baer here with Ryan Rudzeski, and we're talking with Virgil Hammonds, CEO at the Aurora Institute. Virgil, as we talk about some of these stratospheric issues in the field of education, you do so with intimate knowledge of what it means to be an educator. You yourself are an educator, and you have led schools and school districts as a principal and as a superintendent in two very different corners of America, Maine and California. So can you tell us about some of the lessons that you bring to this work at the Aurora Institute from your experience in running schools?
You know, I think there was a call to action, a purpose for thinking differently about what might be possible with young people when we start to recognize where perhaps I'll speak for myself, where I have failed, right? I share a story openly because I think it's important for folks to recognize that despite our unwavering commitment to young people, sometimes we make mistakes. And for me, it was a realization when I was a principal first day on the job, actually. And you see, I had taught second language learners, ESL, English as second language courses in middle school for a number of years. And I was really proud of my work because I was one of those learners, right? I also was a second language learner. I also was a migrant learner. And so I understand the complexities and challenges that families might experience in the school system. And fast forward to this first day as a principalship, and one of my former students comes in with his father who I had never met before. And I was really excited to see this young man because he was a tremendous student, someone I enjoyed having in my class every single day, and was just a wonderful sense of humor, terrific learner. And as I greeted him with great joy, he didn't reciprocate it, which was, I didn't see him in a few years, so perhaps I was a bit too enthusiastic in my reaction to seeing him. But I introduced myself to his father. I said, how can I help you? And long story very short, what came out is this young man, my former student that I had in my English class for 2 years, had just graduated from our high school without the ability to read. And I start to question myself, like, how does this happen? Like, I had him in my class for 2 years. How did I not recognize this? How did I fail? And I had a ton of internal guilt about that. And then started to recognize that, look, this is a systemic issue that we need to address. And how might we do that? And I am just so proud to have served with incredible learning communities that are so purpose-driven and unwavering in their commitment to think differently about what might be possible. And the staff rallied and essentially said, how are we guaranteeing, actually guaranteeing that learners have the skill set, the knowledge to be successful at whatever that next level might be for them, whatever their desired futures are? Like, how do we guarantee that they have their entire toolkit full to be able to be successful without us? And so at that time, we were just turned over every stone and really leaned into what are those competencies we believe are critical for our learners to graduate with. And we did that around our subject matter competencies. We started to lean into community design and what is it that our community believes are valuable competencies that our learners should leave with as well. And we created a shared vision together as a community. And this was a school in California where California was ranking its schools on a scale of 1 to 10. And we were number one, which at that time means we were amongst the worst. And fast forward 3-4 years, and that ranking had gone from a 1 to a 6, all as a matter of being really clear about what the expectations for learning are, but hyper-personalizing the learning experiences to ensure learners were receiving exactly what they needed at that exact time, and accelerating opportunities while personalizing pathways for each learner. And we learned a lot from that. And when I came to New England, I said, this is what I believe, and here's why. And our learning community here in Maine was also very much just like families in California, and every family in between really wants to ensure that each of our young people, each of our children have what they need to be successful, but also are given the opportunity to do so in ways that empower and motivate each learner and each young person.
Virgil, thank you for sharing that, especially the story about your former student. My guess is that among the educators who are listening, lots of them can probably relate. Lots of them probably have similar stories themselves. I know I certainly do as a former classroom teacher. And, you know, when we think about policy change, whether it's at the state or federal or even the local level, I'm sure you know from experience, change can feel slow and it can feel disconnected from the urgency of our present moment or the student who's right in front of us. And I'm wondering, what advice can you offer to individual educators who want to change systems as someone who's worked in education in both regards?
Yeah, there's so many answers to that question. And so I'll speak from personal experience, but also share what others have done as well. I think when we're talking about policy change, how do you spark that urgency is actually by highlighting young people, right? Legislators want the story, but when you put a face to the story, right, and help them to see how young folks can be drivers of change, right, can share their experience, both from one of growth and success, but also to identify those opportunities for improvement. As a result of this shift in our classroom, we are here advocating for greater flexibility to do this work, right? Let's think differently about time. Let's think differently about how we credential learning. Let's think differently about who is the credentialer of learning. And so young people can carry a very impactful and loud message in service of the tremendous work that educators do with them. The other piece is there's a strong need for new metrics of success, right? Like, what's the data to support it? How do we capture that? How do we validate that? And so being able to help drive some of that study, right? Whether it's locally contextualized or it's pooled with others to create this meta-analysis of transformation. States are really starting to lean in and study what is working. How do we measure that it is working? And how do we take those lessons to help drive intentional policy transformation? And there are strong examples across the country, from Washington to North Dakota and Utah and Indiana and Kentucky and Pennsylvania, that are really thinking differently about what might be possible as a result to learning and listening from the field, from our heroic educators that are boldly thinking differently in service of their learners and our families.
Virgil, we're going to close our conversation today with something that Ryan and I call the lightning round. Some rapid fire questions. You just give the first ideas that comes to the forefront of your mind. You just share that with us. Are you ready to play?
Let's roll. Let's go.
What is the best thing about living in Maine?
Oh, man, there's so many things. You have to love the seasons. The seasons are absolutely critical. But I'll tell you this, food. If you come to Portland, I'm happy to be your food guide.
A teacher from your own life who supported your competency-based education, whether they called it that or not?
So the easy answer is mom. First and foremost, always mom. Absolutely. But I'll speak to an educator that helped me immensely as a principal. And this teacher is named Frank Shiro and was just a veteran teacher. He was very successful in the traditional system, but it was him standing up with our team saying, we can do better. Let's do it together. Let's figure this out, and rolled up his sleeves and literally in the middle of the room said, let's lay out what this could look like.
Virgil, what's a skill or an interest that you, Virgil the learner today, are working to develop or would like to develop in yourself?
I will say a skill that I really love. I love food. I love preparing food. But wouldn't it be great to have those knife skills that you see on TV, right? Like the chopping skills that just seem so effortless, where for me, it results in many Band-Aids. I just wish I had that skill set.
Speaking of skills, you were a track athlete in your college years. So are you still a runner? And does running impact the person you are or the work that you do today?
Yes, I was the glory days of college and high school running. Was such an avid runner. It was a big part of my life. I'm grateful that it has introduced me to incredible humans teammates that have become family. Yes, I am still an avid runner. However, for some reason, I do not go as fast or as far yet. I absolutely run, not just for health benefits, but also because it's the best time to think, right? Out there on your own, navigating trails and the roads of Maine and really thinking about what might be possible, really thinking about the challenges that our young people and families are experiencing and how we might address it.
Virgil, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner.
I'll lean back on actually some wisdom that I've learned from both of you is really thinking about how we can help young people or in thinking about their own selves and thinking about their own creativity and thinking about what inspires them. Again, reflecting on my own children, I recall when they were younger, now middle school and high school, lots of questions, right? Like lots of curiosity about why the world around them works in the way it does or why it doesn't work in the way they hope it would. And continue to, as you all say, kind of spark that creativity. How do we continue to do that? By asking questions back, by having them problem solve, by having them seek challenges together as opposed to addressing it for them. It's something that I've learned from my two beautiful children and just giving them the space. The questions, the answers, the solutions that come from them are truly oftentimes heartwarming and also shocking in all the right ways.
Thank you so much to Virgil Hammonds, CEO at the Aurora Institute. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.